discussion on provisions. Right, to see if we can bring something forward from tomorrow.
Yes, and he's okay, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go out with him.
All right.
Right, okay. We move to agenda paper 6 on provisions. I'm losing my voice, so I won't say too much. It's much to the delight of my husband, I have to say, but hopefully it'll last out for this meeting. The board will soon be deciding whether to take on a project to amend aspects of IAS 37. And on the basis of the evidence that we've been gathering to date, the staff are intending to recommend that the project focuses on making targeted improvements to 3 aspects of IAS 37. And we have 2 questions for you today. The first one is the question on page 3 whether you agree that the board should take on a project and it should address these 3 aspects. And then after we've discussed that, there will be an opportunity to also give your views on whether the board should be looking at any other aspects of IAS 37, and in particular 4 that we've highlighted. So, starting with question 1, the 3 aspects that the board, that staff are recommending, and thinking of recommending that the board should focus on, are aligning the IAS 37 definition, liability definition with the conceptual framework, clarifying which costs to include in the measure of a provision following on from the onerous contracts exposure draft, and then thirdly, specifying the rate at which provisions are discounted should include or exclude the entity's own credit risk. So views on these 3 topics first, please.
Anthony.
We would support the initial 3, but I think also some of the others as well. Certainly in terms of the liability definition, I think that has to be done. We know that was influential in the thinking and developing the definition of liability, the conceptual framework, the expectations it might deal with the IFRIC 21 and levies, and thereby it's first got to be dealt with through IAS 37. So I think it definitely is something to be looked at. But I do think it's going to, we may find there's a bit of a I think the further we try and explore in practice within one standard the definition of a liability and the practical ability to avoid, I think it's going to be a real learning experience as to what people think that term actually means. So I don't see it as being a straightforward adjustment in terms of, well, let's just change the definition and we know that's right because that was the definition of the conceptual framework. I think it's really going to stress test that definition. I think the more one looks at, more one tries to examine that, the more complex it becomes. So I think it needs to be done, but I think it will actually be a fairly involved process of trying to understand what does that definition mean when we put it into practice. I think in terms of cost to include, that's necessary given what we were talking about earlier on as well on the incremental versus direct costs. I think that must be dealt with. And then on discount rates, though, I don't understand why one would focus purely on credit risk and not think about the risk adjustment generally. I mean, in my experience in practice, the challenge one finds far more often is understanding what risk adjustment should I make, either to the discount rate or to the cash flows. How do those two things interact? When have I got some flex in the rate and I don't then flex the cash flows, the interaction between those two, I think, is one of the most central ongoing implementation issues. So it seems to me odd to deal with credit risk as A3 and then say B1 is the risk adjustment. I would wholeheartedly recommend that all of that and should be looked at. But I will leave talk about the rest of section B until we get there. But I just see a strong link between those two.
Trisha? Well, we were with Anthony. I think he's expressed it very well, that it's just not clear this is a narrow scope project. Because once you're trying to explore those sorts of concepts, I don't think it's something that is going to be handled easily. And the other thing we thought was there's interactions that haven't yet been picked up. For example, in IS 12, you've got detection risk coming through, but are you going to put that in for the taxes that are not income taxes into the revision of the standards? So we saw it as much more complex. We did a very small straw poll, and I would say of who thought that there should be an alignment and who should not, and I'd say roughly a quarter thought you should not go ahead with aligning the definitions, and three quarters roughly thought you should go ahead with aligning the definitions. So there is a query over that. And I vaguely seem to remember that sometime in the past, it was suggested that the definition in the conceptual framework might be revised as a result of the FICE project. And if that's likely to happen, maybe this project needs to wait until the definition is stabilized. I don't know if that view still applies, but it certainly was an early view in finalizing the framework that you would come back and look at the definition of a liability. So I think it just needs to be kept in mind if that is still in the minds of the board, and I don't know the answer.
In terms of touching it twice as opposed to whether the same issues might come up.
If you revised IS 37 for today's version and then FICE changed it, you may have to go back and do it again.
Although I think if we did with FICE, it's more to do with distinguishing debt and equity, which is...
But there had been a thought that it might impact the framework itself.
Maybe. Nobu?
Yes, thank you. We support the ISB amending IS 37 in line with the new conceptual framework without making changes to the probability threshold.
Can you speak up a little bit, Nobu?
Yes. We think IFRIC 21 is inconsistent with the new conceptual framework, and therefore this interpretation should be withdrawn or substantially amended. Constituents in our jurisdiction prefer to limit the scope of the project, and in that context, they question the criteria between those that go into Section A and Section B. So if you have any reason why you drew a line between the A and B, we would appreciate it.
I can explain why I have done the split so far that way, and it's really because so far the topics in A, we have evidence of diversity in practice or some significant problems in practice with IS 37 as it stands, and the topics in Section B have been things where people have raised sort of concerns about IS 37, but with less obvious evidence of significant problems in practice that could be resolved by a targeted amendment to the standard. But we can come to that.
Jim?
So it seemed to us these are excellent topics as well. Similar reaction to Anthony in terms of the scope that it will seemingly expand to wanting to test that liability definition. The discussion around discount rates, I think, is a very productive one in standard setting. I suspect will be a very challenging one to find both the separation between own credit and some of the other risks, and then a discussion of, you know, the usefulness or lack thereof if you start measuring provisions using own credit. Inevitably, we'll hear the complaints about counterintuitive outcomes if liabilities go down because credit goes one way and suddenly your legal provisions are on the decline because it looks like you're headed toward things that result in potentially more legal claims. So whether users will appreciate that outcome or not. I just, very useful to address in standard setting and doesn't seem at all like a narrow scope project once you get the input.
Very much.
Thank you. We agree with I think the need to clarify the definition of a liability, and you know, that's taken into consideration in the measurement process. Where we are concerned, and I guess it's not so much a concern, but I think it's more support, is the proposal to disclose the basis for the discount rates that are applied. Because in our space, we don't have a lot of deep financial markets. So the base in which people then deal with their long-lived provisions is very different from one organization to the next, which makes it very difficult to understand what people have actually done. So then disclosing what approach they've taken would enable a better understanding of what's gone into the financial statement. So we'll definitely support that.
Think so?
Thank you. We, in principle, agree with the direction to align IAS 37 with the conceptual framework. In that regard, we would like to raise some additional issues. First, I believe that we should review the inconsistency with the conceptual framework regarding the recognition threshold of contingent asset and contingent liability. The current standard has a remnant of conservatism by requiring the asset recognition threshold to be higher than the liability recognition threshold. But this creates conflicts with the concept of neutrality, one of the qualitative elements of a faithful representation in the conceptual framework. Second, the discount rate and risk adjustment are the common issues of measurement across IFRSs and should be addressed in terms of consistency with the conceptual framework or between other related standards. Third, I know that the ISB noted that there is a difference in the recognition criteria of liability between IAS 37 and the conceptual framework. However, the issue appears not to be addressed by the ISB for the very reason that lowering the recognition threshold of IAS 37 to the level of a conceptual framework would create more costs than benefits. But we believe it is worth reviewing the difference between the difference, because in some cases, the benefit would outweigh the cost. If the probability of an event is around the level of probable, which is the recognition threshold in IAS 37, it may cause significant misstatement due to the discretionary accounting choices by the management. Fourth, as another measurement issue among others, if the outflow of resources is probable, for example, if the probability of an outflow of resources is 51%, it should be clarified in the standard whether that 51% probability should be reflected in the estimated amount. Last, we propose to include item B3 in the scope of the amendment to review consistency with the other standards like IAS 16. It's our understanding that IAS 37 paragraph 53, a reimbursement is recognized when it is virtually certain. that the reimbursement will be received. On the other hand, paragraph 65 of IAS 16 requires that the compensation, which is similar to similar concept to reimbursement, be recognized when the compensation becomes receivable. So while IAS 37 has a strong choice of the word virtually certain, IAS 16 does not. Therefore, it is necessary to review the recognition requirement in IAS 37 and IAS 16 for a coherent presentation. Thank you.
Alberto.
Yeah, we are supportive of this project. Aligning the definition of liability with the definition which is in the framework seems something very obvious to do, and not to create inconsistency between standards. The area where we have seen most inconsistency in practice is the cost, which cost include, which cost especially, for example, cost which will be incurred in future for services to be obtained. Typical example, there is a legal claim, far from measuring the possible negative outcome, some people would provide for all the legal costs for the next, let's say, 3 years to come. Others will say, no, I have not received that services, so that cost I do not provide now, but I will charge to P&L in the year to come. So this is one area of inconsistency we have noted frequently.
Linda?
Thanks. So generally supportive and for a lot of the reasons already stated. So certainly think the definition of the liability definition makes sense. Getting rid of IFRIC 21 will make a lot of people in Canada happy because it was problematic in terms of implementation in Canada. Don't understand how you touch the discount rate discussion itself for own credit without considering risk adjustment. So I understand what you're saying, Joan, about evidence of diversity, but it just doesn't make intuitive sense if you're going to go into a discount rate discussion not to package that in. Given that that issue's been hanging on for a while, and when the staff was briefing me, we went back to a comment letter we wrote in 2010. Mm-hmm. We think it would make sense to add that, and whether or not you deal with economic benefits in this project or the other project, it does make sense to deal with that. So I would also kind of acknowledge that this may not be as narrow as you think it is, and so I encourage you to think about that, but very supportive of moving the project forward.
Yu Chen.
Okay, thank you. Generally, we agree with the three items in Section A, but we suggest a different way to clarify the three items rather than initiate a project to make target improvements to IAS 37, because the main reason is that based on our experience, we didn't see urgent issues or challenges identified in applying IAS 37. We suggest that these issues could be addressed either by making a new improvement to current IFRS or by making subordinate amendment to conceptual framework or some way so that the ISB could better utilize the limited resources and focus on other more important and urgent project. Yeah, that's all.
Raina.
I've got some more feedback from other AUSSG members, and that's Hong Kong, Sri Lanka, and Australia. And Sri Lanka has just said generally that they don't see any, or they have not had any specific issues with IAS 37 yet, but the others were broadly supportive of the topics of the first three topics to further investigate and take them on board. But also concerns were raised similar to others in the room that this project scope could get broader than.
Okay. Good. We move on then, and
to question two on page four, which is asking you if there are other topics that you would add to the scope of the project. And we've discussed four in particular that people have suggested might be worth thinking about including.
Anthony?
I mean, I mentioned one. I think certainly risk adjustment is a key problem. Yeah. And this is why I think that these are all. It's very hard to draw a line between these and the scope creep people keep referring to. Notice that not particularly that the measurement objective isn't being considered for review. And I think that gets to the heart of actually trying to resolve a lot of the questions that you'd like to examine. And be it what is the appropriate discount rate, whether you include credit risk, that's a function of the measurement objective. And it seems to me you should include if it's fair value, if the measurement objective is fair value, if it's a more of a kind of value in use type of approach, fulfillment value type of approach rather for has it been a liability. I think it becomes far more questionable whether you do include your own credit risk. Similarly on the reimbursement rights. What is the overall measure you are trying to achieve here, and whether you should change the threshold for reimbursement rights? I don't see how you can really begin to explore many of the other questions without a proper exploration of what is the measurement objective, what's the measurement base. So, and I think that certainly fills into the discount rates, into which cash flows should you go into, should you include, and the onerous contracts. Cash flows too. So I don't see how you can proceed personally without first examining C2 and the measurement objective. When I read what it says on the measurement objective, I think there is, in my mind, it's somewhat confusing two points. You know, there is what is the measurement objective, and then how might you go about it? The measurement objective, the amount one would rationally pay to settle the obligation. Now, the fact in a previous ED, there was a proposal that we'd go to an expected value approach, and people didn't like that. The respondents at that time didn't like the expected value approach. Isn't the same as saying there was a problem with the measurement objective, so of fulfilment. But if there's still a lack of clarity as to exactly what that is or should be, I don't see how you can proceed with the others. So I would certainly. Because I certainly think that following some other comments, B1, B3 start being necessary, but all of these can't be none of these I think can be resolved without first dealing with C2. The debate in practice one has is often around a differing views of what we're really trying to achieve and how we should go about achieving it.
Maybe a similar reaction in terms of whether you'd want to address the measurement objective. I saw it even coming up when you talk about what cost to include, and then trying to square that with little or no discretion to avoid. So if you take the cost to defend a lawsuit, you could incur those internally. That might be your Office of General Counsel's salary. You could incur those externally. There might be a difference in terms of avoidable cost in one of those two scenarios. And so if I outsource it, it may be more expensive, but may be more effective or not. And so do you have to consider not just which cost, but do I have the ability to avoid them, which then gets into, is it a market participant view of cost? And I think at least without talking about that, those questions seem like they're going to inevitably come back to you in comment letter responses.
Alberto?
We would recommend to tackle all these additional issues in order to come to a new IS-37, which is comprehensive, complete, and leave no room for further discussions. There is also your question whether this amendments could be developed within a reasonable time scale without absorbing this proportional amount of resources. Here, we don't know. This is a question for you. as long as you go ahead, you might have a better way to, better information to judge the time necessary and the resources necessary. But at least we would recommend to add these items to a comprehensive project.
The chair.
Okay, thank you. That's our very preliminary views for these items in Section B. We suggest careful reconsideration of these four items, because we have some very preliminary reactions to some of the items. For example, for the item B1, the risk adjustment, the slide 12 said that the board would specify that provisions in the scope of IS 37 should be measured without a risk adjustment. However, in our opinion, this would contradict the practice of the implementation of IS 37. For item B2, if the phrase economic benefits expected to be received under a contract should be interpreted more broadly, that is to include more expected indirect benefits, we are afraid that this may contradict to the requirement that cost of selling contracts only include direct related costs. For the item B3, the recognition threshold of reimbursement rights change from virtually certain that reimbursement will be received to virtually certain that the entity has a right to reimbursement. We are afraid that it may cause some unnecessary practical changes, and it may be contrary to the principle of prudence. So that's our very preliminary views on some of the items. As for item B4, currently we don't have decision on this item, but we think we need more discussion further in the future.
Reina?
Yeah, from the IRSSG, the feedback was Hong Kong in particular would like B2 addressed, the onerous contracts, consistent with the previous feedback, in particular in terms of economic benefits and definition of that. Australia could see merits in all four topics being addressed, but again with the concern that this could obviously broaden the scope a fair bit. The other thing that point that we wanted to make is that the IVSC has just taken on a project on measuring or valuing non-financial liabilities, and that it would be really good if this could be sort of linked or could be worked together with the committee. And finally, one issue that we wanted to raise is that disclosure. So that's been something that has been raised with us in terms of constituents. They have expressed concerns that preparers might not always interpret the requirements of or apply the requirements of IAS1 in terms of estimates and provide enough information on significant estimates of large provisions, for example, for mining restoration rehabilitation provisions, where you could argue that IS1 already requires disclosure of significant estimates and provide information about, for example, sensitivities. But that's not always done rigorously enough, so there might be an argument to look into that and see whether IS37 should not provide some additional disclosure requirements or clarify this requirement that you need to provide information about significant estimates made in calculating your provisions.
On the economic benefits in onerous contracts, several people have mentioned giving more guidance on the meaning of economic benefits. Does anybody have any specific
examples of things that need to be clarified about the meaning of the term economic benefits?
For example, if you enter into a new contract and you a new contract and you have directly related costs that at the moment you are not recovering, like, but I mean, where this contract might give you benefits in terms of because you are recovering costs that you are incurring anyway, like those directly related costs. So is that a benefit that you might include in the calculation of the provision, for example? Because you can't really, because otherwise those costs wouldn't be recovered because you...
We see the issue in U.S. GAAP. I don't know if it's economic benefits or unit of account, but where a hardware manufacturer may have contracts to manufacture hardware for the long term at a loss with the hope that people will buy other components or accessories. And so the economic benefits of producing at a loss are there because they receive value by selling whatever additive products or services there are. So is that a onerous contract or not?
So would you include the expectation of profitable future contracts
on
as an economic benefit?
Other goods or services, not the same thing. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cédric?
Yes, in the same vein, we have an example of a situation where you can sell cars or and you have then maintenance services beyond that and you can't have that maintenance in the future without having selling the car originally, even if the customer is not the same. So you may have loss on the first contract on the sale of the first product and have a related gain on the service contract that will come after or with another counterpart. And it's important to be considered when assessing the onerous contract originally because the maintenance only exists because there was that first sale in the product. So it's a situation which is assessed today in an economic way, which makes sense, that it's important to follow that it should not disappear, that balance between the different contracts which are related, even if not directly contracted.
Okay. Could I make a comment, Hans, on what we've heard? Because obviously the staff are trying to decide what to recommend to the board when we come back. And I think the team were trying consciously to look for quite a limited scope project, bearing in mind the board has had some difficult history with this standard in the past with more comprehensive projects. What we've heard rightly from some of you, I think, is that even with the three topics listed in Section A, we should be under no illusions that they'll all be easy or quick or narrow scope. And then several people have suggested additions to the list either from Section B or even from beyond Section B. Some people have also suggested going for more fundamental reconsideration of the measurements objective, which in an ideal world, if you were starting with a clean sheet of paper and doing nothing else, is probably where you would go. But that's probably not going to make the project any faster, I suspect. So I think you've given us some quite difficult food for thought there.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. So we'll bring forward from tomorrow a discussion about IFRS for SMEs that are subsidiaries. Let's take a break till 3:10 and then resume.
For us subsidiaries. Yeah. We'll get the right.
Yeah. I didn't get the mic.
SMEs. Yeah. Yeah. SMEs that are subsidiaries.